Ryan Nicodemus earned over $100,000 a year. He owned Brooks Brothers suits, the latest gadgets, a new Toyota Tacoma. By any conventional measure, he'd made it. Yet one Monday morning, he woke up in an empty room, having packed away every single possession and conducted an experiment that would change his life. He'd only retrieve items he truly needed. 10 days later, he stopped going back. Thousands of dollars worth of stuff sat unused in boxes, silent witnesses to a haunting realization. He already had everything that mattered. The rest was just weight. This isn't one man's quirky epiphany. Something profound is shifting across the developed world. Political scientist Ronald Engelhardt tracked a remarkable transformation. Where 4 out of 5 Europeans once held materialist values, today only half do. 2/3 of people now believe they'd be better off living more simply. That's 240 million Americans and 40 million Britons actively trying to escape what we might call stuffication, that suffocating feeling when possessions stop enriching your life and start burying it. In 2000, archaeologist Jean Arnold turned her expertise from ancient Chumash tribes to middle-class Los Angeles families. Her UCLA team's findings were staggering. Even the smallest 980-square-foot home contained 2,260 visible items in just 3 rooms. Average households possessed 39 pairs of shoes, 90 DVDs, 139 toys, 212 CDs, and 438 books. 3/4 of families couldn't park cars in their garages. The space was packed with possessions. This wasn't just abundance. Psychologist Darby Saxby measured cortisol levels in couples while analyzing their homes. Women who described their spaces as messy, cluttered, or chaotic showed unhealthy stress hormone patterns, the kind associated with chronic fatigue, PTSD, and higher mortality risk. Our stuff was literally killing us. The dangers aren't merely statistical. In 2010, a cigarette ignited a Toronto apartment packed with papers and books. What should have been routine became a 6-alarm inferno requiring 300 firefighters battling for 8 hours. Hoarding impacts 2-6% of people in developed countries, potentially 18 million Americans. The difference between hoarders and the rest of us is degree, not kind. Richard Easterlin's 1974 research revealed a stark truth. Beyond basic needs, increased wealth doesn't increase happiness. Americans had grown less happy since 1960, despite earning more. Philosopher Jeremy Bentham observed this through the law of diminishing marginal utility. A little is good, but more doesn't bring proportional joy. We've transformed consumer culture into pseudo-religion, replacing meaningful existential questions with trivial choices about which smartphone to buy. Material goods quickly bore us, creating endless cycles of acquisition and disappointment. As status symbols, they trap us in anxiety-inducing games where we constantly worry about our position. Most alarmingly, materialism correlates with rising depression. Mental illness in developed countries doubled from the 1970s to 2000, with Americans 3 times more likely to be depressed than in the 1950s. The solution seems obvious: buy less, keep less. But like obesity, where we know we should eat less yet struggle, our relationship with stuff is complex. We need to understand how we got here before finding a way out. In May 1925, future President Herbert Hoover told advertising professionals they'd taken over the job of creating desire. America faced overproduction. Manufacturing and agricultural output had grown 4 times faster than population since 1865. By the 1920s, textile mills could produce a year's supply in 6 months. The country faced a choice: produce less or consume more. Ernest Elmo Calkins pioneered the solution with 2 radical ideas. First, transform durable goods into disposable ones. Make products people used into products they used up. Second, convert thrifty Americans into wasteful consumers by making products beautiful but quickly outdated. By applying fashion's cyclical nature to all industries, Calkins convinced Americans to replace items not because the old one is worn out, but because it is no longer modern. Even Henry Ford, who claimed, "We want the man who buys one of our cars never to have to buy another," began changing car styles annually by 1933. This approach spread globally, lifting millions from poverty while communist living standards stagnated. Ironically, this best idea created one of the most pressing problems of the 21st century. In Sacramento, Tammy Strobel had everything. Good job, luxury apartment, 3-diamond ring, yet felt deeply unhappy. Her 2-hour commute drained her, debt stressed her, and her health declined. When her fiancé Logan suggested downsizing, she resisted. But watching him sell his car and possessions, she saw the benefits. They gradually shed belongings, moved to smaller spaces, and built a 150-square-foot tiny home. Tammy reduced her possessions to 69 items, took a lower-paying but meaningful job, and found greater happiness. This sparked a movement, Dave Bruno's 100 Thing Challenge, others living with 33 items. Yet minimalism has limitations. It's incompatible with modern lifestyles and ignores the fundamental goodness of stuff. Physical possessions provide security, protection, identity expression, connection, and sensory pleasure. Minimalism defines itself by what it rejects rather than what it offers, essentially reactive, not aspirational. In 2003, psychologists Tom Gilovich and Leif Van Boven proved experiences bring more happiness than possessions. Their research revealed 5 reasons. Experiences improve through positive reinterpretation over time, while possessions lose appeal through hedonic adaptation. Experiences resist comparison, reducing status anxiety. And they integrate into our identities while connecting us through shared activities. Marianne Cantwell's awakening came on London's crowded tube. Despite her dream job as a marketing consultant, she felt like a caged animal during rush hour. She became a digital nomad, moving between Thailand, Italy, Australia, and the UK. Sue and Bertrand Lynette, a couple in their 50s with 3 children, rented their London home and traveled the world with backpacks, seeking experiences that made life worth living, including getting stranded in a Peruvian snowstorm in t-shirts and flip-flops. Unlike 1960s hippies who rejected society, these experientialists remain engaged. Cliff Hodges left Silicon Valley but runs a business. The Lynettes travel while Bertrand manages his restaurant remotely. These hippies with calculators reject conventional materialism while maintaining functional businesses. They've exchanged traditional success markers for lives with more meaning and freedom. The shift from materialism to experientialism is accelerating. 2/3 of people regularly declutter, and economic data confirms it. Material goods dropped from 80% of national income in 1934 to less than a third today. Britain reached peak stuff in 2003, consuming less water, concrete, paper, cars, and clothes since. Meanwhile, spending on experiences like entertainment, tourism, and live music continues rising. Companies are adapting. Tom's donates shoes instead of offering discounts. Patagonia encourages repair and recycling, even telling customers not to buy unnecessarily. Apple obsesses over experience despite selling hardware. The sharing economy, Zipcar, Netflix, Airbnb, enables access without ownership. For millennia, the church preached thrift. Then business leaders used mass media to promote a gospel of consumption, happiness through spending. Now we need new values addressing materialism's dark sides while leveraging technologies providing access without ownership. By having less and doing more, we gain less clutter and anxiety, more meaning and connection. The cultural revolution toward experientialism is here.